Hello, Laura.
Hi, Vinny.
Hello. Always a pleasure, never a chore. Welcome to July.
Yes, it is.
This is the July Club Soda Podcast, a place where you can discover low and no alcohol drinking and all tips and tricks from people in a massive community.
It's really funny. I'm glad you told us it was July because, you know, all of my months are merged into one. I'm not sure about you.
Yes. I've quite often freaked out by a weekend. A lot of time merging going on. So what do we have coming up in July?
Well, some of you may know that we run a Mindful Drinking Festival, which is an in-person, you know, festival where you can meet the brands and come to talks and workshops. We had planned to do three this summer in Manchester, Glasgow and London. And of course, we're not doing any. So we're moving it online. I can tell you a bit more about that in a minute.
Yeah, okay, we'll get to that. What else have we got coming up in the podcast?
We've also got an interview with Spencer Matthews. Some of you may know him from all sorts of reality TV shows, which we worked out that I hadn't watched at all during the interview. But he's introduced a new drink onto the market called Clean Liquor, and so we talk about that. Then I talked to a wonderful guy from America who's currently living in France called Chase. He's got a podcast called Stone Cold Moderation. And he's really been exploring how to moderate, tools and tips to moderate. And so I had a great chat with him. Then we chat with Club Soda member Claire, who shares her story. And then finally, we have the last in our series with Niraj from Mind Unlocked.
Mind Unlocked, an organisation that curates and shares evidence-based practical tools for better mental well-being.
Apparently. Absolutely.
Nice. Well, that's very much what this podcast does as well, practical tools and tips. So let's start by talking about this festival. Now, festivals usually happen with bunting here in Britain and smiley happy faces and low and no alcoholic drinks. That probably is going to happen in a digital sense. How's that going to work?
Okay, well, the great thing about moving it online is whilst you might not be able to taste the drinks in person and speak to the people who make them, what we will be able to do is bring together the global mindful drinking community to run all sorts of events. So you will not just meet the UK people, but you'll meet our colleagues in Australia and America and Canada and all across mainland Europe, which is really exciting for me. So I've been speaking to somebody this morning about the Australian component of the event and the tastings that we're going to do. And we're going to try and repeat that feel that you get. So you'll be able to browse stands, get discounts and meet the makers over different types of calls. We'll be running panels on workshops as normal. We'll have some social sessions where you can meet other people and be part of a guided and facilitated meetup. And you'll even be able to get some music from DJs and the like. We've just been planning some amazing stages. So we've got a mindful drinking academy. We'll have some wellness sessions. We'll have drinks tastings, and you can order boxes from our friends at Wise Bartender. The work. So you can go to mindfuldrinkingfestival.com to see about that. And it'll be running Thursday, the 30th of July, all the way through to the end of Sunday on the 2nd of August. So come along. It's, as always, completely free at Club Soda to come to these things. And we've got so many different events that will fit in with wherever you are in the world.
Oh, congratulations on moving that festival online. That festival, for those that haven't been to the physical one, has been growing every year and is usually held off Brick Lane here in London.
Yeah, that's our January one. And actually, that was our 7th in January. So I'm glad we can at least get an 8th in this year somehow, by hook or by crook.
Yeah, excellent work. Congratulations on that growing. Laura's a little bit too humble to say this, but each of the festivals, as I say, have been getting bigger, and she always gets extremely positive feedback from everyone involved. Right, moving on, I embarrass you with any praise.
Well, actually, our next interview is pertinent to the festival because I've interviewed Spencer Matthews, and he's got a new drink on the market, a new range of drinks, actually, under the Clean Liquor label. He does a clean gin and a clean rum. And he tells me a little bit more about why he changed his drinking and, as a result, why he decided that he wanted to create a new drink, not just for him to drink, but for all of us. I'm here with Spencer Matthews. Some of you may have seen Spencer on telly. I'm sad to say I didn't, because I don't tend to watch reality TV. And I stopped whilst watching MasterChef after I gave up drinking, because it just made me want to eat food all the time. So it began to... I never even watched you on Celebrity MasterChef. I'm a bad person.
Not at all, Laura. In fact, yeah, I've already put you on a bit of a pedestal as someone who's very sensible. I myself don't like reality television, nor do I watch it ever. I wouldn't call it a means to an end, because it was great fun and it was enjoyable being on TV and stuff. But actually, my life has taken a completely different course now, and I'm glad it has. So
yeah. Well, you never know when you get presented with the opportunities what you would take or how you would react to them. So I don't blame you at all.
Yeah. No. Well, it was good fun while it lasted, I think. You know, I joined Made in Chelsea when I think I was 20 years old. I might have even been 19. So,
wow, has it gone on that long? Who knew?
Yeah. So I'm the ripe old age of 31 now. So no, it's very much behind me. I don't want to bit the hand that fed me, so to speak, but it's a very, very different me who engaged in Made in Chelsea.
Well, that's okay. When you were in Made in Chelsea, at the same age as you were in that, I was already elected to local government and I was a cabinet member. And that now also to me seems like a lifetime ago. So
I always knew I'd have friends in high places, Laura. There we go. And here we are talking. Look, we're about to change the world.
Well, absolutely. Although I guess we've both given up drinking. So somewhere on the line, we might have gone to low places.
Exactly.
So you've just reached a milestone, haven't you?
Yeah, so 2 years sober, Monday just gone. But actually, weirdly enough, I don't see it as a kind of pat on the back moment. I don't suffer from it. I hate the term, well, sorry, for myself, the term kind of recovery. I don't feel like I'm recovering from anything. I made a positive life change, positive decision to just not drink alcohol anymore. Turned alcohol into the complete enemy to begin with, was very sanctimonious in a very annoying way to many people, I'm sure. And then just kind of settled on how can you miss something that actually brought you no joy at all. I just believe that the illusion of being drunk and that it's fun, in inverted commas, is just such a misnomer. It's very rare actually to become extremely intoxicated and to have a good time as a result of it. And I suppose I had so many good times in my life that I really feel as though I wasn't missing out on anything. I don't think I'll ever have fear of missing out on anybody else's situation or life. So for me, it was a really easy decision. It just felt like the end of a long and not even turbulent relationship, just a long relationship. I fancied a change. I was drinking pretty regularly towards the end. You know, it wasn't, I'm not talking about a couple of beers after work. You know, I would find it completely normal to drink most days, if not every day. I would kind of drink to excess most of those days. Not necessarily be kind of like falling over myself drunk or waking up somewhere that I don't remember or blacking out, like none of the above. Just having, you know, several units in me kind of pretty much at all times, I guess, became a hindrance to my life and to my creativity and to my potential in general. You know, I had a son on his way in 6 months from when I gave up. And I just thought, why not give yourself the best chance of being just better, I suppose. I think we can all agree without being preachy that there's no positives to consuming alcohol to excess. So I thought, may as well put it behind me. Let's use this as an opportunity to grow up.
It sounds a bit like me in some ways, which is, and also where I set up Club Soda to be from, which is Club Soda is not aimed at anyone who identifies as being in recovery. It's not an identity that I have either, but it's aimed at anyone who's been a bit of a dickhead with booze, which I think is a far more pertinent description to what was happening for me. And like you, my drinking went up a lot more before I decided to give up, and I was 38 when I gave up. So there is that idea that, you know, people think you have to be rolling in a gutter and your whole life has had to fall apart, when actually you can just think, is this the life that I want to lead, and is alcohol serving me anymore, or is it now holding me back?
Yeah, I understand alcohol's place in society, and I understand that a lot of people don't have an issue with alcohol. But my strong suggestion would be that if you do feel like you abuse alcohol or that you drink alcohol too regularly to excess and you lose time in bed, or you're unable to achieve the things that you think you can achieve, or you're unable to work in a proactive manner, or it's affecting your life in a negative way and affecting those around you negatively, it's quite essential to address that in my experience.
Yeah, and there's actually people in Club Soda who... Everyone loves to compare. Well, how much were you drinking before you felt you had to give up?
All of this stuff is...
Yeah, and actually that's not relevant because we've got people in Club Soda who don't drink very much, but it's affecting their sleep. So they now want to sort it out. And I think that's the important thing is there a bit of your life where it's affecting negatively, where taking it out of your diet will actually improve it?
Yeah, no, well, absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, I know a handful, if not more, of extremely successful, happy people who have children who drink to excess, you know, and it's like, it just doesn't get in the way of their life. So to point fingers and tell them that, oh, you're an alcoholic, or, you know, Harley Street says so, doesn't make sense. You know, like for me, it became a ball and chain. It became a hindrance. So you got to address that. But some people, you know, my wife, for example, if she has a couple of vodka sodas or a couple of gin and tonics, she may not be falling over herself drunk, but she may be, you know, a lot more anxious the following morning, or she may sleep terribly. It just, it affects people differently. At my worst, I could put away anything you want, you know, like I could drink a bottle of whiskey and probably wouldn't feel too, you know, awesome afterwards, but I could, you know, walk around, I could converse. Whatever, alcohol, even if you were to be breathalyzed drinking, your sex, your weight, your size, what you've eaten, it all makes a massive difference.
Yeah.
So you know.
And it gets harder as you get older, is all I can tell you. So.
Oh yeah.
The longer you've been drinking for, the more impact it's had on your brain as well. Yeah. And that's why I'm interested in the milestone you've got to, because I actually felt that, and some people would hate to hear this, I felt that. Overall, it takes a lot more time to finally get rid of those last sort of linkages with alcohol in your brain. And I remember at 3 years, I had had a highly emotional incident. And for the first time, I didn't think about alcohol as being my response to that incident.
Yeah.
For me, that was a real big moment because I realized that any bit of my brain that was still hardwired to think of emotion, alcohol had finally gone. And that took nearly 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking the other day that the whole situation going on, you know, in the world at the moment with COVID, and, you know, I know that had I not given up alcohol before that, I would be drinking. It's hard for me to say all this because I don't know what I would be doing, because I have a son now, you know, and I've got a daughter on the way. So I don't know. Obviously, that has made me think differently, prioritize things differently. Had I not had children and it was lockdown, I would be drunk all the time. But obviously, having a son, I don't know if I'd be drunk all the time. Let's hope not. But certainly my relationship with alcohol would be different. I think I don't want to say that people use lockdown as an excuse to do anything. But I think in general, when faced with adversity, a lot of people's natural human, you know, reaction is sometimes to turn to alcohol. We saw it with alcohol sales in retailers. I think an average of £57.60 or something to be precise was being spent by families on their weekly shop, more alcohol. And then we saw that tail off and No and Low got a bit of a nudge. But, you know, it's kind of, I know that I make better decisions all of the time because of my sobriety. And those are
the small things that people don't often hope for. So lots of people would hope for, everyone thinks they might drop a stone and suddenly become instantly thin within a few months of giving up drinking. And I say, well, that's okay. That might take a bit longer because you may want to smash Haribo in your face for the first few months instead of drinking. But actually, it's the decision-making. Trusting your gut was one of the biggest things for me. Re-engaging with people, being able to have eye contact with people for a longer period than just a few minutes because I felt so ghastly. Those were the biggest wins for me.
But also just being able to make informed, sensible decisions. You know, I now surround myself with really experienced, smart people. And I can't help but think there's no way that I would have been able to hold my position, you know, in this kind of business if I was still drinking. Not a chance. And I'm proud to be, you know, in our team, and I'm proud to have created the team as such. But it's, for me, look at things on both sides of the fence. And this side is absolutely ghastly, and this side is awesome. So for me, it's kind of like, why I'm nowhere near sitting on the fence. It's like, and people say, oh, but don't you miss a glass of champagne at New Year's Eve? And it's like, yeah, but sure, if you think that way, it's a really weird way to think, because, like, you know, I'm having an awesome time. I feel great. I'm switched on. I'm alert. I feel like I can entertain just as well when I'm not drunk. I guess I'm lucky in that respect. A lot of people feel that, you know, they need alcohol to come out of their shell, I suppose. I've never had that issue. If anything, alcohol made me more dull and shut me up a bit more. So I'm louder now than I ever have been. And funnier now, I suppose. Not that this is a funny topic, but you know,
it's like this is like two extroverts speaking. I'm the same as you. I find now that all the things I did to bring people together in a room are better now because I'm sober and not looking at where the next drink is.
It's strange because I don't hate alcohol at all. Like I don't, and like our products have 1.2% alcohol in them, and people say, "Well, how can you call yourself sober?" And it's like, well, I don't really care what I call myself. Like you call me a pisshead if you want. I don't really give a shit. What I care about is feeling sober and never feeling the negative effects of alcohol. I can drink bottles of clean gin or clean rum and legally drive a car. Do you know what I mean? So like, and not that that's any great sales pitch, but my point is, I don't ever want to feel like alcohol has a grip over me. I don't ever want to feel like any judgment that I'm making is impaired. I don't want to ever feel under alcohol's thumb, and my products will never do that to you.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you a question because you're still like in your early 30s, you're 31. And for lots of people who've come through their 20s and early 30s, the thought of never drinking again seems like a really long time. Is this it for you now? Do you think that's it or...?
The only reason I'm even huffing and puffing, like, yeah, it is. I have no interest in alcohol. Whether or not I'm ever going to sip on a delicious glass of red wine in France somewhere, I really don't know. My relationship with alcohol was shocking. I wanted to consume alcohol. My body felt dependent on it. It would be so odd for me to leave the house and not have a pint of some sort, you know, and like... I was just in a really poor decision-making process when it came to alcohol. I'm not going sober for a bit and then, oh, we'll see, we'll test the water again and I'll have a few gin and tonics in the sun and hope for the best. Like, that's not what I'm saying. But can I speak to when I'm 60 years old and hopefully I've achieved all the things I want to achieve, and who knows, I might have half the day off and I might be in the sun with my wife. Will we enjoy a glass of rosé? I really don't know. But my as I said, my stance isn't anti-alcohol, it's just pro positive decisions. And for me, alcohol was about to ruin my life, and now there's no alcohol in my life at all, and I don't really see the point of it. Like, do I use alcohol when I cook? Sure. Like, we're having a couple of people over, I made a sauce this afternoon that's full of red wine and I'll enjoy it later, you know. And it's kind of like, I'm not what you would I was nailed online the other day for referring to myself as an ex-alcoholic. Apparently I'm not an alcoholic because, you know, otherwise I wouldn't be able to eat bread and drink mouthwash. And it's just like, I think everyone's got a bit of a like strange view. My stance is I just don't want to get drunk. That's all, you know, if that's it.
Because people often stumble because when we're drinking, that was a big part of my personality. And it sounds like it was a big part of yours. That big party person who went out there was always the life and soul. And so people feel that they have to nail their colours to a mast before they've even got going on feeling what it's like to be alcohol free. Yeah. And I say, you know what, it's not a linear journey. You need to just follow your gut, but it's not going to hurt you to not drink. So give it a whirl.
I don't want to be drunk, so I don't drink alcohol. Yeah. You know, I want to be as productive as possible and create an awesome business that hopefully other people will enjoy. I can't do that if I'm drunk and I don't feel like getting drunk. That's kind of my stance on it. You know, our products have less alcohol in them than a ripe banana, and I get people telling me that I'm drinking alcohol every week. It's like, well, you know, there's kind of different ways of looking at it, and you know, as long as I'm
there's
not
there was a great time 2 years ago where I brought a box of kombucha in a crowdfunding campaign to crowdfund them. And Yussi, my co-founder, who's also my partner, he's a moderate drinker and he'll have like 2 beers a month. It's about that. Anyway, after I finished this box of kombucha, they phoned up to tell me that they'd had their test done and it came in at 1.7%.
Yeah.
So I wasn't upset. I didn't suddenly feel that I'd fallen off the wagon. Yeah. I mean, it did explain why I was enjoying that kombucha slightly more than any other kombucha I'd had. But, you know, I hadn't been intoxicated. I'd had one, and in an evening. So it's really important that you don't get a sense of failure if some of those things happen either.
And I think it's an education piece and it's a control piece. You know, if you feel like you're a recovering alcoholic and you think clean gin might tip you over the edge, then don't drink it.
Yeah.
You know, like I think like everything. Somebody said to me the other day that we're effectively acting as a trigger. And it's just like, well, I said if you feel like it might trigger you, then please don't drink it. And then I did ask her actually. I said, well, if you were stood in a bar or outside a bar, would that trigger you? Because obviously everybody's drinking alcohol there, and you know, she said, well, your product looks like gin, and it has some alcohol in it, so it might trigger you. And I just said, well, she said she would drink something that's 0.5, but not 1.2. And I just said, but do you understand the fundamental difference in the negligibility of both of those ABVs? And she was like, no, but I'm a 0.5. And I just said, well, it's very difficult for me to get on board with what you mean by that, because ultimately, I don't think you understand what you're saying.
Well, it's some of the hang-on from AA that has inserted itself into general societal knowledge that isn't true. So... and not everyone is triggered by something that looks like or tastes like an alcoholic drink. I find red wine slightly more triggery for me, the smell of an wine. Yeah. Normally, the really cheap white red wine just smells disgusting. But I never drank beer when I was drinking. It has no trigger for me whatsoever. And for many people, it doesn't. And so to assume that that's a fact for everyone is very disingenuous and not true.
Yeah, I suppose I can only speak from personal experience. You know, like there's gin in our house, and there's whiskey in our house, and there's wine in our house, because when people come around, sometimes they fancy a whiskey. And, you know, I watch people drink a whiskey or drink a wine, and I don't suddenly, you know, do cartwheels all over the place, you know, wanting one for myself. But it's each their own, like all this stuff. I think people just need to understand that. You know, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot more of it on the market, and it's going to grow into a really massive category, as it already is, which is exciting times for all involved.
Yeah, so let's talk about this. So you have created an alcohol-free brand, which no one can see that I'm holding up, but I have a bottle, which is, I've got your clean gin here. And you're right, it's 1.2%, but you wouldn't drink this on its own, would you? You'd drink it mixed, so that means it must come in at well below 0.5 anyway.
Yeah, it will do. If mixed with tonic, it'll be less, presumably about 0.5. Hard to tell as each drink is mixed differently. But I mean, it's only really designed. It's distilled in exactly the same way as gin. It's made with the exact same ingredients as gin. We're going for a London dry gin taste and feel. But you know, it is very much designed to be mixed with tonic and to deliver the flavor profile of a gin and tonic. I've had a few people drink two or three of those and go, oh yeah, well, I do feel a bit pissed. And it's like, you don't. You think you do, because that's kind of what it's designed to do. It's an adult replacement to an alcoholic beverage, but you certainly don't feel drunk off it. To put it in perspective,
there's always a placebo effect, I find.
Yeah. to put it in perspective, you know, beer is roughly speaking 5%. You drink 330 milliliters of that, or call it a pint for argument's sake. So you would need to drink 4.5 pints of neat, clean gin to have a beer. You know, so it's, yeah, I don't know how many 50 mil shots go into 4.5 pints, but probably 30, 40.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's, you know, you'd have to motor through a fair amount of clean gin to even consume a beer, which I understand that a lot of people who don't want to drink any alcohol at all won't do, and that's fine. You know, I think we're more a brand, even though I am sober, we're more a brand for moderation than total abstinence. The market for moderation here in the UK is far larger than the market for total abstinence.
Well, more importantly, that combined with the alcohol-free market, the driver market, the pregnant women market, that's now a significant size. And it's in all of our interests that we see that market as being a very allied market that wants interesting drinks, because then it's much bigger. So when I speak to pubs and bars, I do talk about, you know, the 8.6 million people who are moderating their drinking, and then the 4 million that aren't drinking, and then the 700,000 women who are pregnant. And altogether, we make up a massive number of people with power to get better drinks.
100%. And it's unfair to somebody else. Sorry, I keep referring to people talking to me online. But obviously, you know, we have an 85,000 strong Instagram following amassed over the last few months. And literally, someone said to me the other day, it's just like, why would you make this? If you weren't drinking alcohol, why wouldn't you just drink a Coke? And it's like, because I don't want a Coke. I want an alcohol-free gin and tonic.
I also like that argument because, you can only drink one Coke on an evening out before you're sugared out. But actually, sugar is more likely to trigger you than be triggery than than your product, because sugar hits the same pleasure centers as alcohol, and so your brain wants more and more and more. So actually, I want, you know, when we're going out and drinking, we want something healthier, not something that's unhealthy now we've made decisions about our life. And I think that's really important as well. So it sounds like you get some of the same discussions as we have regularly on our group. And actually, there's a lot of work to do in education in this space. But what, I mean, why did you decide that this was the thing that you were going to do after becoming sober, to create a drink? Why didn't you go off and do something else to create a business? Why was it a drink that took your imagination?
I was offered a seed lip and tonic at a dinner party when I was 3 months sober. It was described to me as an alcohol-free gin and tonic. And I'd never heard that term before, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing, because I was a big gin and tonic drinker, and all of a sudden, I'm being offered an alcohol-free gin and tonic, and I was in my really sanctimonious phase of, oh, no, I don't drink alcohol. And I thought that the product was not quite to my taste, but it was an incredible idea, and I kind of fell in love with this bottle. I took the bottle, and I read all about it, and I Googled it, and I messaged them, and I said, you know, is there any kind of role for me, you know, within your brand? And they said no, which is fine. And I said, great, I'll make my own. So I basically wanted to take the concept of alcohol-free spirits or liquors, as I call it, and just do it a bit better. They have no juniper in their products. They don't refer to themselves as a gin or even an alternative gin. They're a completely standalone thing. They are a distilled non-alcoholic spirit. And I just thought, well, why don't we just make a gin and a whiskey and a rum and a tequila, and you know, we can have bars all over the country, because sobriety at that stage had really taken a hold of me, and I was like so proud to be this like this better being. I felt like a kind of superhero almost at the time, and I thought more people could do with knowing about this. But now that I can't play a part in their brand, you know, we'll make our own. So I flew to Cork in Ireland, and I met with this distillery, and we did a ton of work on creating an alcohol-free gin. And there was a lot then surrounding, well, you can't call it that, and, you know, you can't call it this. And we just thought we'd run some risks, and we took the opinion of calling it clean gin. Clean is not to suggest that alcohol is dirty, by the way. It's clean and sober, clean living, clean eating, clean drinking. I would like to be a thing. And I met a gentleman called Justin Hicklin, who was formerly of the Gin Guild. Not anymore. Was sacked. And
for making your product.
For making an alternative to full strength alcohol that I believe the world really wants. He was thrown out of the Gin Guild. And we thought we would go on this journey together and create alternatives that I believe people want and I believe people need in many cases to full strength alcohol. And I, my dream is to be able to, for anyone to walk into a bar and order any alcoholic cocktail they want, but proceed it with clean, a clean mojito, a clean Mai Tai, clean piña colada, clean whatever you want. And we'll have the liquid to deliver and taste the alcoholic cocktail that you want. Soda water's boring. I didn't enjoy drinking 10 soda waters when I was out. As you said, Coke's very sugary. And I want to feel like part of a group. I don't want to feel alienated when I'm out and about. I don't want a big sign on my head said that I'm an alcoholic, or I'm now sober because, you know, I had a disturbing issue with alcohol. I don't want to go into it. I'd rather just order a clean rum and Coke. You know, here's three rum and Cokes and a clean rum and Coke. I'll have the clean rum and Coke's positive decision. And that's that, you know. So we wanted to make a really easy bar call for people to understand. And we wanted to create liquids that people that weren't confusing. Again, not to be negative towards Seedlip, but I don't know what Seedlip is. You know, I pick it up, I don't know what it is. Whereas, you know, you pick up a bottle of clean gin. Oh, I guess this is low alcohol gin because it says so on the bottle.
Yeah. Well, I think the alcohol-free sector and the low and no, because there's some great low beers out there as well, are beginning to redefine drinks as a whole around the occasions where you might drink something. And so now it's not just good enough to say, well, do you drink wine, beer or cider? It's, you know, well, what do you drink when you're socialising? What do you drink when you're having dinner? What do you drink when you're having a cocktail? And of course, all these products fit into the occasion. And that's what excites me. I now drink a wide range of drinks, but it depends on the time of day and whether I'm eating and who I'm with that makes a difference.
No, absolutely. I think it's important to offer choice to the consumer as well. You know, if you can have this that you love so much, why not be able to have it like this? And, you know, the world is moving that way. Beyond Meat and is a great example. And back to the point about alcoholism, you know, I eat meat, but I understand the benefits of not eating meat all the time. So, you know, I suppose you can say you moderate your red meat intake instead of being a vegan. Or, you know, like, obviously being a vegan means that is the definition of, is the equivalent to being teetotal veganism, yeah. You know. But I have always preferred to just live a kind of more mixed life. And I think my 1.2% alcohol products that won't get me drunk are a perfect alternative to full strength alcohol for someone like me.
Where can you get it at the moment? Where can people buy it?
It's in 496 Sainsbury's stores. There's a store locator, Stockist, on our Instagram at Clean Liquor. And we are also in Dunn stores in Ireland. We're going to have a direct-to-consumer business set up in Ireland quite soon, but we do deliver to Ireland. And cleanliquor.com, you can just buy directly off the website. We are in quite deep discussions with a number of popular UK retailers, and we should have some news very soon on when we will be in other stores.
And then when pubs open again as well, you can find details on clubsodaguide.com. But we score pubs and bars for how good they are for mindful drinkers, depending on what products that they've got in stock. And we've weighted different products. So obviously they don't get any score for Coke on a hose. But people begin to find which venues you're in, as well as retailers lists as well. So that's really
fantastic.
Cool.
And I love your mindful drinking movement. I think it's fantastic. We'd love, obviously we're already members of yours, but we'd love to talk more and see how we can further spread the word and help each other.
Yeah, and I think this is something that alcohol hasn't necessarily had, which is we're a movement of consumers, venues and drinks brands, and together we can really make a difference. And for me, the consumer being part of the whole of the journey of this, and being the advocates and the fans and all those things, is a really helpful, exciting prospect, I think.
It's terribly exciting, Laura. Honestly, I think household penetration in the next few years is going to go through the roof. So I think we're poised and ready and in a really cool position to make a difference to many people's drinking.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much for your time today, Spencer.
Thanks so much, Laura, for yours. Chat soon.
That was Spencer Matthews from Clean Liquor. Where can you find out more about that, Laura?
If you go onto clubsodaguide.com, you can see his brand along with 1,000 others, and you can work out where to buy it and when pubs reopen, which ones will be serving it, which is fantastic news.
Now, moving on from there, we have a young American, Chase. Tell us about him.
Everyone's relationship with alcohol is a bit different, and if you're in the younger age bracket, the chances are you haven't got like a 25-year drinking career behind you like me, and your decisions around how you're going to change your drinking may be different, because to give up forever seems a really long time when you're in your 20s. So I was really interested to meet Chase. He runs a podcast called Stone Cold Moderation, and that came out of him exploring different moderation techniques for him. And he was a very different drinker to me. He drank at weekends, and that's what really worried him, and that's what he wanted to change. And so he's really immersed himself in the subject of moderation, and I was really keen to find out from him what he had learned. Here with Chase, and he has a blog called Stone Cold Moderation. Well, actually, it's a podcast, is it, or a blog?
It's both, podcast, blog, YouTube cool. channel.
And I'm really interested because very few people podcast and blog about moderation, and so I thought I'd catch up with Chase to see what we can learn from him. So hello, Chase.
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
I'm good. And tell us where you're from, Chase, and tell me maybe a little bit about your background and your story.
I am originally from San Francisco, California. I studied in university in Texas. And since then, since finishing school, have kind of moved around and traveled. I've lived abroad the last 4 or 5 years. And I'm actually in France right now.
Cool. And tell me how old you are, Chase, because I think this is a relevant point.
I'm 28 years old.
So you're still in that under 30 bracket. You're still quite young. So why have you even dared explore moderation? Surely you should be enjoying your 20s and getting hammered all the time.
Well, I was. You know, I kind of started out like most kids, I would say, drinking when I was around 16 in high school. I was a pretty calm, normal drinker. And during my high school years, started to accelerate in university. And that's when it started to really become a problem. But I mean, in that world, it was so normal. Binge drinking, it's so normalized, especially in, you know, American college culture, that I didn't really think it was an issue. When I graduated and sort of got into the professional world, that's when I first started to see that my drinking habits were becoming unsustainable. I saw very clearly how much it was damaging my life and realized I needed to make a change.
So how much were you really drinking though? And what did you, and how did you think it was impacting you?
During my college years, that was just, you know, complete insanity. You know, two or three times a week, heavy binge drinking. In my early 20s, fresh out of college, I would say I was probably only drinking 3 or 5 times a month. So not every day. I was never somebody who drank every single day, never somebody who was quote unquote dependent on alcohol. But when I did drink, I was normally binge drinking very heavily, typically above 10 drinks. I was kind of trending down because I just realized I couldn't do that. But I kind of slowly started to just, I guess, pace myself more, you could say, and slowly started to just cut out a lot of those nights off of the calendar. 5 at most occasions per month where I was drinking, but it still became very unsustainable for me.
Well, you know, and that to me interests me because everyone wants to compare what they drink with each other to see how bad they feel they are. And to some people, your amount of drinking will seem like not too bad, actually. For some of us, getting away with 5 times a month, you know, completely drunk would be a great thing to do. Change your drinking is about the impact you feel it's having on you. So what do you think the impacts were on you when you were drinking and those occasions?
I say that I'm like the self-proclaimed hangover king because my hangovers were absolutely, absolutely brutal. I'm kind of a lightweight, to be honest. I have a little bit of a weak stomach. And so my hangovers would typically make me, I was typically very sick the next day. It was typical that I would be throwing up the next day. And it would completely wipe me out physically and emotionally for about a week. So I kind of calculated and I was like, you know, if I'm doing this even 10 out of, you know, 50 weeks in a year, like that's a big chunk of my life where I'm not operating at 100% capacity. And for me, that was a huge problem. The worst thing for me was definitely what it did to my mood. I'm somebody who also kind of has struggled with mental health, since my, you know, adolescent years. So the fact that when I binge drank, I mean, there was an immediate and direct correlation between me binge drinking and me having like depressive episodes. At some point I was just like, what am I doing? You know, this is completely unsustainable. I knew it all along, but it just took me a very, very long time to kind of accept it because again, like it's so normalized in our cultures. And I would say the other thing was that kind of jumped out to me and that really started to worry me was how much it influenced how I planned my calendar was all around drinking. So I would kind of mark events. I would mark days on the calendar where I thought, okay, I can probably drink this day and this day and this day. I'm going to go out this day, this day, this day and get drunk. And once I saw how, you know, my entire social life was really wrapped just around alcohol and the drinking itself, that's when I was like, this is not good.
And were you programming in the recovery time afterwards as well and recognizing that, you know, if you were going to do this day, there's no way you could do anything the following day?
Absolutely. Yeah. I never scheduled anything or planned anything for like my Sundays because I knew I was going to be hungover.
And I find this really interesting because, of course, I did exactly the same. And in fact, you begin to not realize that you're organizing your calendar around drinking. But I did exactly the same. It's just that our patterns of drinking were different. And maybe the impacts of drink on us the following day were slightly different. But ultimately, we were beginning to realize our lives were being structured around our drinking habit.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, like, I think at my lowest, probably like a year ago, before I made these changes, yeah, I was probably only drinking maybe 2 days out of a month, because that's when I was really kind of still, you know, trending down, so kind of on my last legs, so to speak. But still, I mean, two days out of a month, absolutely hammered and just suffering the hangovers afterwards, it was not healthy for me.
So you talked about actually cutting down the number of days that you were drinking even before you decided to take an active look at moderation. Why did you do that and how did you do that?
I'm a teacher. So just the fact that coming into class on a Monday and, you know, the kids, they don't know that you've been drinking per se, but they can tell, they, you know, 13-year-olds are super, super perceptive. Like they can tell when you're not right. So just the fact that I was very conscious of how it was affecting my energy levels, and that hurt. That hurt me. And it hurt me that I couldn't, you know, be as good of a teacher for my kids as I wanted to be. And I realized that, you know, if I drink on a Saturday, if I drink on a Friday, Monday, I'm not going to be okay. So just for that reason, that's kind of the first thing, the first factor that led me to saying, okay, I need to cut down. But yeah, so no, but it was unfortunate because there was a lot of nights out that I missed out on. There was a lot of times where I would literally just say, okay, I'm not leaving the house this weekend because I know if I leave the house, I'm probably going to end up drunk. If I see my friends, I'm going to drink because I just didn't think I could control myself. So that was unfortunate. But that's kind of how I went about it. I just started really locking myself up.
I'm going to come back to that point. But when did you start actively looking at other moderation techniques? And what do you consider to be moderation for you at this point in time?
Yeah, so I was living abroad. I was living in Colombia, actually, in South America. And after I left Colombia, I went back home to California for a little bit to kind of, you know, cool off a little bit and get my next life project underway. And it was during that time, actually, where I was at home and I, you know, didn't have so much of a social life at that point, wasn't drinking a lot, but ended up having when I had a couple of occasions where I did end up seeing friends. Like I traveled, I went on trips to see my friends. And I got so drunk on those like two occasions at those two separate occasions in two separate months. But that was kind of my last straw because I went on such ridiculous benders those weekends and it hurt me so much that, you know, I had these rare opportunities to see my friends and I was just blowing it by being extremely, extremely drunk and blacked out and, you know, destructive. That I was like, okay, I think that's it. You know, I need, now I really need to do something. So that's when I first started to get into it. It's funny how stuff kind of just arrives to you at the correct time in life. And I think I was just on YouTube and somehow some like videos of some like comedians, I remember I was watching a particular show and it was a comedian talking about her sobriety. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like if she can do it, like I can probably do it. Which led me to reading a couple of books and developing my own strategy. So actually I didn't start really researching about moderation itself until after I had started practicing it, because I kind of realized for myself, I don't know if I'll be able to just cut out alcohol forever, and I don't know if I want to. So I started just basically experimenting with some rules for myself. When I saw that was going to work, and then when I decided to make this podcast, that's kind of when to make my podcast, that's when I decided to maybe start researching other moderation strategies out there, other philosophies out there.
That's cool though, but you took some input from comedy and started to apply some rules. So tell us a bit about what moderation means to you now and what your rules are.
Yeah, so for me, I mean, I'm still starting out this journey. I have kind of an idea of the kind of drinker that I would like to be, per se. You know, I would like to be the kind of person who in the future, you know, if I go out, I don't need to drink. I don't need to drink in drinking situations, quote unquote. But if I'm on the beach at some point in the future and, you know, I can have a beer. If I'm at a nice restaurant, I can have like a glass of wine. And if I do get invited out for drinks, like I can just have one or two and just be fine. So that's kind of my idea of what I would like to achieve. And if along the way I stumble, I'll have to make some changes probably. But right now, I basically just have a rule. I call it the rule of three. And when I can't, you know, it's pretty simple. I can't have more than three drinks in a day. And since usually I'm not in a position to drink more than, you know, three or four times a month, that has worked for me. Well, situations today that I'm in, like 8 months ago, me would not be able to handle that, would just be drinking. But I feel that I can now be invited out, for example, you know, to a bar and just not drink and just choose not to do it. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really interested in the fact that you often people want to moderate because they don't believe that they can go out for an evening in an occasion with alcohol and not drink. So I'm really interested that, do you think not drinking in drinking situations is an important part of you being able to control your drinking overall?
Absolutely. And for me, that was like the biggest kind of revelation in this entire experience, because that's kind of the thing that was keeping me from really accepting that I needed to make a change at, you know, through the years of drinking, thinking, you know, I'm not going to be able to have fun when I go out. How am I going to socialize? How am I going to meet people? But when I started to experiment with moderation and I went out for the first time and just did not drink, the kind of like exhilaration that came out of those experiences and the real connections you have with people and how fun it was to just be, you know, myself and uninhibited in my own skin in those situations was really a revelation and really motivated me to continue to do it. And I never want to go back to where I was a year ago, 2 years ago, just being so incredibly drunk that you're not present anymore in those situations. That's been amazing, actually.
And I get the impression, therefore, that one of your rules is that you don't drink if you're at home alone, because if you're saying that you only drink when you're out, does that mean that you've got an implicit rule around it's just not something you do at home?
Yeah, and I was never, I guess luckily I was never somebody who really wanted to drink so much when I was at home alone, because I've always just had other ways of relaxing. But yeah, I definitely don't drink when I'm by myself, especially at night, because since I've been doing this research and you know, finding out about how much alcohol affects your sleep, I'm not down with that anymore. It's been easy for me to completely cut out the drinking alone.
Everyone's got their triggers, and clearly going out was yours.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about the research that you've been doing since you've delved deep into this subject, and what do you think are the interesting findings for people who are looking to moderate?
Yeah, well, reading some books, reading your book, for example, is extremely interesting. Been involving myself in a lot of like Facebook groups, kind of just talking to people online, people who have responded to me on my podcast. I think the challenge of it is figuring out what is going to work for you and kind of what actually makes the most sense to you, because there's a lot of disagreement and there's a lot of controversy around a lot of these different issues, like alcoholism and what is an alcoholic and is it a disease, is it not, all of these things. It creates a lot of debate. But definitely getting out there and kind of educating myself has been very eye-opening and given me a lot of confidence to say, okay, I think this is what I believe in. This will work for me.
And what I'm really interested in is the thread across all of what you're saying is that people have strategies. They have plans, they have rules, but they don't just go, I'm going to moderate and expect it to happen.
I think that's kind of just been how I operate. I've always been somebody who likes to have a plan, who likes to have a strategy. You know, I don't like to just react to a situation. I like to have a plan going. And so I've kind of always been that way personally. But I think human beings, we function better when we have a little bit of structure, when we have some rules and guidelines, and when we understand that there's going to be negative consequences if we break those rules, and there's going to be a lot of positive consequences if we stay within our limits. So for me, that has been extremely, extremely effective. That's kind of what I've been having conversations with people about. The progress that I've made so far makes me very encouraged for the future. So yeah, I'm definitely all for creating your rules, having a strategy, and something that is simple and that works, and that's not going to cause too much stress and emotional strife for you, because that's kind of defeating the purpose.
People think through what will work for them, but that you're definitely focused on the consequences if you don't stick to the plan that you've got for yourself, and creating the life you want to lead is a big part of shaping your strategy and your plans, and you've clearly got an idea on the type of life you want to lead going forward.
I'm hopeful. I realize that I've been very encouraged by a lot of people who have reached out, who have said, you know, it's a journey, you know, recovery is not linear, so to speak. There's a lot of ups and downs. It's kind of a journey of self-discovery. So there's no real need to be perfect. Like, you can stumble a million times. And I think if you are still going in the right direction, that's progress. And there's something to be to be proud of there. So I think I'm starting out with my journey, but the progress that I've made so far has been extremely, extremely encouraging. And like, organizations like yours, it's incredibly helpful for people and very inspirational. So thank you as well.
Well, thank you very much, Chase. Thank you so much for sharing your story, and I'm sure we'll hear more again from you soon.
All right, thank you very much for having me.
Chase there talking about his astonishing hangovers and the way that it suddenly he realised that it was taking his life in a different direction. And good for him
Ooh.
For making some big changes.
Finny, I've remembered something.
Talk to me.
Well, if you're interested in moderating or going alcohol-free, we of course have our courses on joinclubsoda.com that you can sign up to. But if you work in the food and drink industry, we currently have a hospitality-specific course, so designed around your needs from work, that's available absolutely free, funded by the Drinks Trust, which is the big charity in the drink sector. So for the next 3 months, you'll be able to access our Mindful Drinking and Mindful Drinking AF in Hospitality via our website. So if you go on the front page and scroll down, you'll see it there, absolutely free. And it's an amazing relationship we'd built up. And the fact that the industry has funded this course to make sure that anybody working in the sector is able to come back to work healthier and happier is really, really awesome.
Is there something slightly more challenging about working in the hospitality industry when you're having second thoughts about your relationship with alcohol?
Well, you're working with alcohol all the time, and you make your money out of it. So sometimes to worry about your drinking habits, you feel like you're doing something wrong by your employer. And actually, the industry is really keen to make sure that that it's okay to ask for help, it's okay to cut down, it's okay to not accept drinks from customers if you don't want to. It's one of the industries with the highest rate of issues with alcohol, so that's no surprise. But we created this course with funding from the Wellcome Trust and AB InBev because we found that at the minute, nobody in the hospitality sector knows where to send people to if they need help. And if they send them to abstinence-only based models like AA, not only is it an abstinence-only model, but they would often suggest you leave your job because it would be seen as being triggery. We don't believe that's the case. We've met so many people in the sector who work with drinks and work with alcohol who have managed to change their drinking habits. Some even go, I've even met somebody who's a wine taster who's alcohol-free and carry on with a career that they love. For us, this is part of a mental health program within the sector, and we're really pleased to be able to do this with the Drinks Trust.
Amazing, thanks. Claire is a Club Soda member. If you're not a Club Soda member, then why not? It's as simple as
It's
going
free to join. You can sign up on the website on joinclubsoda.com.
Yeah, so easy to do. And one of the good things about this podcast is we get to hear from people with different stories about their relationship with alcohol, and we get to hear how it's affected them and indeed how they've come up with hopefully some solutions on it. Tell us a little bit about Claire.
So Claire is amazing. In fact, she did come and work with us for a short while, and you may have met her volunteering at the festival. But, we've had some conversations here today about changing your drinking for lifestyle reasons and for parenting reasons and even looking at moderation. Claire actually had a problem that was more significant than even I had. In fact, she had few spells in rehab, and her mental health has been part of her issues with drink. And she shares very honestly and very candidly in this interview. So for those of you who may need it, there's a trigger warning. She does talk a little bit about depression and self-harm and mental health and even suicide. But we felt it was really important to share that with you because we're all in a different place with our drinking. And some people have some amazingly big hills and hurdles to overcome. And Claire is one of those people. And I have to say, I am so proud of her. She cannot, I cannot explain to her enough how proud I am that she's managed to not only navigate the changes she's made, but some really difficult issues since she's given up drinking and has done those alcohol-free. So here's a little bit more from Claire.
My name's Claire. I'm 41. I live in Cambly, which is a little town in suburbia, about 50 kilometres outside of London. Currently live on my own in a one-bed flat. I've been trying to get sober for over 10 years. I first went into rehab when I was 30, and as we stand now, I'm 22 and 2 months and something sober. I did rehab 5 times. A couple of times it was just a detox because I'd got myself into such a bad dependency with alcohol that whenever I tried to stop, if I wasn't very, very careful. I ended up having seizures. I had sort of more than 40 or 50 seizures, goodness knows. So, yeah, been detoxed a few times. This time, when I went in November 17, it somehow felt different. When I went into Windmill House, and I've been violently sick for 6 weeks coming up to it. I couldn't eat anything. I couldn't drink anything. I was having to keep myself on 30 units of alcohol a day, and I was just spending all day, every day in bed vomiting. And the old AA phrase, sick and tired of being sick and tired, has never been truer. And although I may have had one lapse since then, there was something different about it this time. For me, I used to drink a lot out of boredom, just to make the day go away. And it was a phrase I frequently said to myself after I got divorced, because my drinking had been uncontrollable, things like that. I was staying with my dad and, oh, I'll just get a bottle of vodka. It'll just make the day go away, won't it? But the problem is, you wake up the next morning, you're shaking like a leaf, your head's feels like it's been split in two. Your flat's a mess. You've got less money in your bank account. It is a no-brainer. But at the time, this seemed like perfect common sense. I've got borderline personality disorder. I've got a history of self-harming and eating disorders as well. So I've got a bit of a track record for dealing with things in an inappropriate way. Just before this COVID-19 thing really kicked off in the UK, sort of about mid-February, I started feeling like my mental health just wasn't in a great place. I'd been through a lot of big changes lately. I'd ended a long relationship. I'd moved into a flat for the first time in 20 years. I'd started a new job. I was seeing a new partner. There was quite a lot going on, but then I found out that this job might not be carrying on, and I couldn't cope with the certainty, and I fell back on self-harming was the first thing, and I had to drive myself to A&E and get super glued together. A couple of weeks later, I took an overdose. I was just feeling really crappy, and that wasn't really with the intention of ending my life, but I just wanted to go to sleep for a while. The next day, my new partner, who's been lovely and he's remained a friend throughout, he's a great chap, he broke up with me because he's 9 years sober, and he was a little bit worried about how I was handling everything. So the following day, yes, I did try and actually commit suicide. I ended up back in A&E again, and I feel terrible at this time. The doctors and nurses are struggling so much that I ended up with 3 mental health related visits to A&E that could have been avoided with a bit of self-care, with a bit of phoning the crisis line, talking to a friend, rather than retreating into my shell. Those are all things I'd recommend. If you are feeling like having a drink, chances are, if you're a member of this group, you're not thinking of having one drink. You're probably thinking of having quite a few. That's going to set off a chain of reactions, however big, however small. You'll upset someone. That might just be yourself. But you are the most important person at the end of the day. If you're thinking about having a drink, distract yourself. There's so many good groups online. Club Soda have got 7. By the time you've filled your Facebook news feed with all of these funny jokes about sobriety, all of your friends' comments about, oh, go to get smashed, it's going to be such fun, or whatever it is that you're finding triggering, they start to disappear into the background and you don't notice them. Fill your news feed with positive things about how life is so much better without booze in the mix. If you're at home and you're bored, Kindle, online ballet, those are the things for me. I've been sleeping a lot as well. Doing some exercise, if you can, get out, go for a walk, just around the block, around, away from people, then do it. But there are so many different types of exercise you can do at home, online. YouTube is an absolute wealth of yoga, mindful meditations and actual exercise. I like just doing ballet classes. Other times, just sit down, make yourself a little nest in your favourite armchair, get your blanket, get your teddy bear, and say to yourself, yeah, I'm feeling a bit pants, but that's life. And then just indulge yourself with some of your silly television, your Harry Potter films, or your Buffy, or whatever it is that you turn to when you need to feel a bit of an escape from the real world. Personally, I'm still drinking way too much Diet Coke and loads of squash. Occasionally have a cucumber tonic, not Fentimans, Fever Tree, do a really nice cucumber tonic. Sometimes have one of those with dinner, with a bit of pentire in it, it's an alcohol-free botanical. Mainly, though, I'm still sticking to the Diet Coke. And if I can do this, you can do this. You can do it. Life is better without booze. It really is. Cheers.
Very honest and open, heartening stuff there. Dialogue from Claire, a Club Soda member. Laura, I gave up social media a couple of years ago and it's done me well.
Well, to be fair, I think it's probably done your followers well.
Yeah, but all six of them. What's your relationship with it? Because Claire talks there about how you can surround yourself with positive things in your feed. Is there something to be said about just actually ignoring social media at times?
Well, it depends. I wouldn't suggest you give up everything that holds you in the world right now all at once. If you're changing your drinking, then you may find that when you get to those trigger points in the evening, that there's a real benefit to dipping into a community like Club Soda and talking to people and finding out how they're doing, or playing like a crossword on your phone, doing things that distract you during the feeling of discomfort. So if you currently use those things, don't try and change everything all at once, whatever you do, because you know it means that, for example, if you're on a diet at the same time as changing your drinking and you eat a chocolate bar and think, oh, that's it, I've broken my diet, I'm a failure, you're likely to hit the fuck it button on everything, including your drinking. So your drinking has to be your priority. I can tell you, if you want to deal with your digital life after that, you can. I had to deal with sugar after giving up drinking because I was mainly Red Bull for several months after giving up drinking, but that's okay. It helped me through that difficult... Well, I had no room to stuff Haribo in my face. I was drinking too much Red Bull. I was still only having one can a day, but I'd moved from a small can to one of those pint-sized cans. Oh. You know what I mean? So, yeah. But anyway, I needed that to get through changing my drinking. And once I was far more stable with my drinking and knowing that I was feeling less and less triggers, I was able to deal with sugar. I was able to then add in diet. And a bit later, I was able to add in exercise. So don't give everything up all at once. And certainly, if you're giving up drinking, you need to learn new skills. And so immersing yourself in podcasts and in online groups and in Instagram feeds that support your goal is no bad thing. But if you do want to change your relationship with the digital world as part of a more mindfulness practice, then actually Niraj next from Mind Unlocked will tell us how we do that.
Mind Unlocked, an organisation that curates and shares evidence-based practical tools here on the third and final part.
This is Drew from Club Soda and I'm joined by Niraj from Mind Unlocked. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you.
Cool. So one of the things about me, which people who've hung around me will know, is that I've become over the past few years a bit of a technophobe. I don't have a smartphone. I really try and limit the amount of electronic screen distraction I have in my life. I've got a hilariously expensive but perfectly beautifully formed little dumb phone, which does pretty much everything that I love. But this is an area that I'm really interested in, quite aside from everything else that we do in Club Soda. This is a little kind of personal passion of mine, which is about digital detox and kind of the benefit of stepping away from that kind of distraction. And this is something that you're interested in as well.
Yeah, it's my favorite subject is the relationship between technology and the human mind, everything from the problems it's caused all the way through to some of the potential solutions that are coming.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about some of the problems that you see.
Well, I think really briefly, there's an analogy with alcohol here, because we're talking about, you know, technology is addictive. And if we're not conscious and if we leave it unchecked, then we can become the slave to technology. The same way that if we're not conscious about our drinking habits, we can become a slave to those habits and not really understand why. My personal view, I love technology. I'm on my second technology company, which is Mind Unlocked. I've invested in a bunch of tech. I have a lot of tech at home. However, I also think this concept of digital balance, like how we manage that relationship with technology, is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. So at the same time, there are some very specific things that I do to make sure that I'm as protected as possible from the dangers of tech while still utilizing it all.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing in this space, because one of the things that we observe in Club Soda is, Club Soda has Facebook groups, you've got an Instagram. There are lots of ways for people to interact with us, but actually there is a massive amount of information. You know, if you are setting out on a journey right now of changing your drinking and you're on Instagram, there are a billion people to follow with advice. You know, you could spend a lot of time in, as you're changing your drinking, actually forming a really quite compulsive relationship with your smartphone. And I wonder how it is that people can, what your kind of top tips are for people who are kind of maybe kind of going, I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed with the amount of stuff that there is.
Yep.
How do I filter? How do I kind of, make that relationship work for me with tech.
So I think if we look at sort of bigger picture, proper habit change, then our favorite resource in this space is Atomic Habits by James Clear,
which
my most recommended and read book of last year, and it will be this year as well. I think if we're looking at deep-seated habit change, I cannot, you know, his blog is brilliant, the audiobook's brilliant, the book is brilliant. These are cheap resources, and he's gone and done all the work, and it's really made for the modern age. You know, it's only published recently, so it covers all of technology. So I think that's my number one recommendation. If somebody, is like even interested, I wouldn't say even like serious about this, then start there, as opposed to getting all your advice from Instagram.
So then
we find that on the one hand of the scale, that's the best thing to do, but habit change is difficult. That there are some really cool apps out there that can help someone, so we can start using technology in our favor instead of being a slave to technology.
Do you have recommendations? It's one of the things that people ask us quite a lot about, is particularly around tracking apps and behavior change apps generally. What's good, and how do you choose when there's so much to choose from?
So I'd say tracking apps. The native phone ones are okay, but I would recommend Moment on Apple and Quality Time on Android, because they go a little bit further. They'll tell you a bit more than the native apps want to tell you. And the point of tracking is because we have a cognitive gap between what we think we're doing and what we're actually doing. So the first time I used a tracking app, I'd recommend people use it for a few days so they can see what really is instead of what our brain's telling us. I'm a heavy email user, and I would have said that I opened my email up 20 times when I first started tracking it in a day. It was by lunchtime, it was 50.
Wow. Right?
And that alone made me realize, okay, these habits aren't what I want. Like, how is this even happening?
Yeah.
In terms of practical stuff, so those are tracking apps. I'd say there's an app called Freedom, which is really good because it's a website and app blocker, which you can configure however you want it. And it also works across all of your devices, so you can't turn it on your phone and then go and cheat on your laptop. For me, where I go for distraction habitually, going back to my sort of teenage days, is sports websites and news websites. So I just kind of block all of those for an hour at a time or two hours at a time. We're big fans of Brain.fm. This is functional music that affects us at a cognitive level to help us focus, to help us relax.
Oh man, I still need that.
it's so good. So I that's probably the most used app on my phone. And then the last one I'll recommend, for because it ties into meditative practice, we love Insight Timer, because it's, number one, it's free, and number two, it's the largest library of meditations on the planet that you can filter by length, topic, voice, whether it's you can filter in or out spiritual, in or out religious. Mm-hmm. You know, for somebody who wants to really explore meditation or meditative practice, this is the absolute best place to go. And you know, when we go back to the whole habit formation piece, it's just basically like every time we're compelled to do something we don't want to do, we can make a choice to, okay, I'll just spend 5 minutes on Insight Timer, or I'll just turn on Brain FM for 5 minutes. Yeah. And we often find that once you overcome that initial urge, that then you're kind of happier doing the thing you chosen to do in advance.
Yeah.
And yeah. You've got time for one last tip?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
My probably favorite one, because like when we look at sort of technology habits where people are unhappy with them, it's usually email, social media, gaming, or entertainment. Mm-hmm. Like entertainment, including like streaming apps like Netflix and YouTube. So I would say the basic meta here is make an undesirable habit harder and a desirable habit easier. So what does that actually mean? It means when I'm working, my phone is now 2 meters away from me, so I can still see it. So I don't panic about that, mm-hmm. because I know what people, you know, that can get like. But every time I go and reach for it because something's become a bit uncomfortable or I'm bored or my mind's trying to procrastinate, it's not there. And that gives it enough of a pattern interrupt for me to ask myself, hang on, what on earth am I doing?
Yeah.
So you know, it's the same as if we want to stop eating chocolate, the best thing you can do is just take chocolate out of the house. That yep. Changing your environment is so much easier than trying to be disciplined.
Yeah, and you know, there are really good, you know, everything that you've said is basically you can kind of lift and shift and apply to drinking, right? One of the things that we talk about quite a lot is about making good decisions easier. You know, changing your drinking doesn't have to feel like a struggle. And if it does, it actually suggests that you're probably not thinking about all of the triggers and the environment around you and how you can change that to make it more likely that you're going to drink in the way that you want to or not drink. And so actually kind of making it not about you and not making it like a willpower struggle, but actually thinking about what you can change around you to make your life easier and make it more likely that good stuff's going to happen. And that seems like that's just as true for that bit of tech on your phone is for, you know, my terrible late night eating habits or, you know, people's drinking habits or whatever it is. You know, actually, we can think about how we change the world around us to make it more likely that we get the outcome that we really want.
Exactly. The best thing about learning about how our minds work and learning about how we do things and becoming aware is that we can then apply this to anything else. And we, you know, start stacking habits. So improve our drinking habits will probably improve our, you know, as it worked for me, it's like, okay, I'm also, you know, trying to improve my fitness and stuff. And it's like, okay, well, now I've been to a gym class, I don't want to ruin that by eating a pizza. So it's, you know, these good habits can stack on each other. Yeah. I think also this idea of reducing the friction in our environment. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes British people are a little bit shy about this. This next thing I'm going to say. When I first stopped drinking, I didn't make a big announcement, I'm not drinking, because that then my mates would have been like, oh, go on, have one, you know, mm-hmm. all of that kind of thing. Like, what we know, what's wrong with him? Does he think he's better than us, that kind of thing? I just said, I'm on medication, I can't drink for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Because then no questions are asked, you know, like people don't want to ask sensitive things. And if they did, it'd be like, well, look, it's a bit personal, I'm not telling you, you know, let them mm-hmm. guess. But it was always, or I'm driving, you know, I've got like 6 a.m. start tomorrow, so, you know, today I'm not. And I just found by taking a friction out, it means you don't create a situation where you're now on the defensive.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I honestly, after about 3-4 months of this, then I was comfortable saying, yeah, I'm just taking a break, and then they just left me alone.
Yeah, but absolutely.
And then the other thing is just using that to, you know, I get that it can be a social crutch, but then realizing that I can still let my hair down and mm-hmm. still, yeah, it's going to sound a little bit silly, but act as if I've had a couple of drinks.
Yeah.
And find that actually being around other people drinking can be a lot of fun, yep. but I don't get the consequence.
Yep. Talking of drinks, you are having a drink right now. Tell us what's in your hand.
Sisters London Fields Beer Passion Fruit Sour. So, yeah, it's nice. I mean, when I started drinking again, I didn't really start drinking beer again. So it's mm-hmm. been years. But you folks introduced me to some great non-alcoholic beers. So yep. yeah, which has some hops and stuff that helps you sleep. So it's yep. good.
Yeah, nice, excellent. Thanks so much, Niraj. It's been a joy. Thanks for coming to speak to us.
Thank you, Drew.
That was the final part in a 3-part interview from Niraj from Mind Unlocked. If you're interested in hearing the former parts, if you haven't heard them, go back to the podcast before this one. You can find them all in the same place. And if you want to find out more about Mind Unlocked, go to mindunlocked.co.
So if you want to take part in the festival, it's absolutely free to come and watch everything and be part of everything. Go to mindfuldrinkingfestival.com. If you want to find out about all of our courses and things like that, and this podcast and our weekly blog, and sign up to our email, then go to joinclubsoda.com. And then also, if you want to send us anything in for this podcast, because it is a community podcast, this isn't about me coming on every week and Vinny saying nice things about me. That's not how that is, really. Our aim is to be a crowdsourced podcast. So if you've got a piece of advice or some learning you want to share, or even you've got a question you want me to answer and find the answers to for you, then let us know. You can send in bits of audio and then Vinny will edit them so they sound all beautiful. You can send it to laura@joinclubsoda.co.uk. Basically, this is your podcast, so tell us what you want.
Great stuff. Happy July. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy the sun. Enjoy the slight lack of lockdown as things return to some sort of normality, in inverted commas. Let's not get too far into that. Stay safe and do keep talking to each other.
Goodbye.
This was mixed and produced in the UK by We Make Podcasts. For more information, go to wemakepodcasts.uk.